You're listening to The Drew Marshall Show, Canada's most listened to spiritual talkback program.
Up next, the one and only Mr. Ted Neely from Jesus Christ Superstar. Stay with us.
Every time I look at you, I don't understand why you let the things you did get so out of hand. You'd have managed better if you'd had it planned. Why'd you choose such a backward time in such a strange land? If you'd come today, you would have reached the whole nation. He's wailing for peace, he had no mass communication.
Don't you get me wrong?
Don't you get me wrong?
Don't you get me wrong now?
Don't you get me wrong?
Don't you get me wrong now?
Don't you get me wrong now?
Only wanna know.
Only wanna know right now.
Only wanna know.
Only wanna know.
I only wanna know.
This man's role in Norman Jewison's 1973 film Jesus Christ Superstar absolutely blew people away. His vocal range was astounding. And, of course, now Tim Rice and Andrew Lloyd Webber's critically acclaimed production of Jesus Christ Superstar will be stopping by Toronto February 15th and 16th, of course, starring Ted Neely. This is going to be Ted's national farewell tour, apparently, of playing the role of Jesus Christ. This guy has got one of the best rock voices in the history of rock, for sure. Please welcome to the show, Ted Neely. Ted, great to have you.
Thank you very much, Drew. Proud to be here.
Boy, that's some kind of Houston drawl, let me tell you.
Well, I was listening a bit to what you guys were talking about a couple minutes ago, and I thought I would hit you with that to see how it felt.
Thank you. Thank you very much. How's the wife and kids doing, Leanne? What's she up to these days?
Everybody's wonderful. Thank you for asking. Is she still doing her magnificent ballet, dancing, teaching, choreographing, all of that from her roots in the National Ballet of Canada?
Nice. Good roots there, let me tell you.
Yes, sir.
And Tessa, Zachariah, what are they up to?
Tessa and Zachariah are both in college as we speak. They're both fighting off the extreme urge to come out on the road with me.
But okay.
They've decided to be adults, more so than their father, and they're working on their education.
Good. Well done. Well done. Ted, can you believe that the little drummer boy, Teddy Joe Neely, is almost 65 years old?
No, but I sure appreciate that, as opposed to the option.
Which is dead. Yeah, I guess.
Yeah, right.
Are you still into the drumming stuff a lot?
Absolutely, as much as I possibly can.
You know, I'd say two of the guys that kind of blew me away and would be Virgil Donati and Steve Gadd. Have you ever seen those guys play?
Oh, God, yes. I've worked with Steve many times in sessions, you know, and he's just absolutely remarkable as a recording drummer, obviously alive as well. But in the studio, you should just watch what he can do. It's absolutely remarkable.
Yeah, I brought a friend of mine when I was living in Australia to a James Taylor concert, and we sat down front row, and all of a sudden the band comes out, and he goes, his jaw just dropped. He's a drummer, my buddy. He goes, "That's Steve Gadd."
Right.
He didn't even care that James Taylor was there. It was like, wow, Steve Gadd.
So. There you go. And those are the kind of guys that he's always worked with. You know, James Taylor's had the pick of the crop of all the musicians.
Yeah. Hey, do you ever wonder, Ted, what would have happened if you'd gotten drafted like your buddies from the band?
Well, yes, I have. I've spoken many times with the buddies from the band who did that and got back alive and well, thank goodness. And we've all speculated on the possibilities. I'm just thankful that it went the way it did for me and that they came home safely and we still have a great relationship.
The Ted Neely Five. Boy, you know, that must be... Are they on eBay at all? Is there any product on eBay?
Well, you know, there are certain things that eBay will not allow on there.
Mm-hmm.
There's certain things that just don't stand up to the criteria.
Criteria, yeah, that's right. Well, I think you were like 20 years old, roughly, when you got the part of the other guy, right? I mean, because didn't you try out for the role of Judas first?
You have done your research remarkably well. Yes, I did. I was definitely inspired by the idea of creating someone new. I didn't want to take on the possibility of playing the most recognized icon in all of history, and I auditioned for Judas. I did Heaven on Their Minds, and I was very proud of how that went, and the director, my dear friend Tom O'Horgan, with whom I had worked for 3 years prior to that in Hair, came up on the stage in his normal manner, threw his arms around me, told me that was wonderful. He said, but I'd like you to come back tomorrow and sing The Other Guy. So, been singing The Other Guy ever since.
I guess so. Did the picture get a lot of heat from the Jesus people when it was released? I mean, I thought I came across an article that said you actually had to walk through picket lines sometimes.
Oh, absolutely. When we did the Broadway show, which was in 1971, the original work, we always had to get through picket lines just to get in the theater to go to work. And it was from people who really hadn't heard the piece nor had ever seen the piece. And they were putting things, as you say, reading between the lines of everything about the project. And I honestly would ask them to come in as my guest and see the show. And those who did walked away loving it.
Easy to do for sure. But it must have been frustrating back in the day. I mean, you know, I guess that was the platform Jerry Falwell would have jumped on back in the day, right? You know,
you're absolutely right. It all came from, you know, assumed blasphemy, because once people saw it and realized that it's a concept based on the first four books of the New Testament, primarily the Book of John, Tim Rice went in there and so it brilliantly pulled the dogmatic language out and turned it into something we could understand. And it deals with humanity, deals with the man that Jesus, when he walked on the earth, as seen through the eyes of his friends and his foe.
Hmm. The lyrics that were changed, was it Hosanna in the temple, were they changed to make it more acceptable for the Jesus people?
No, they were adjusted, as we say, to make Timothy more happy with that which we were saying. You know how writers can be when you get a chance to put something up and look at it and listen to how it is reacted to by an audience. You come in and you decide to do little changes, which he has done even up until this project. Both he and Andrew readdressed the piece for this particular tour.
Nice, nice. Well, Hair led to Superstar, and then Tommy, and then Sergeant Pepper. I mean, you've gone from Claude to Jesus to Tommy to Billy Shears.
Yeah.
Multiple personality disorder happening in your life, obviously.
The whole thing for me was just the fortune to be in that particular place at that time, and those projects called for, you know, guys who could scream high notes. And I, being a rock and roll drummer from Texas who did that, I was lucky enough to get the call.
But who are you? I mean, at the risk of sounding like a Dr. Phil session here, you know, you're not Claude, you're not Jesus, you're not Tom, you're not Billy Shears. Who's Ted Neely?
I think maybe an amalgam of all those particular gentlemen, all of them the figments of the imagination of contemporary rock music authors, you know. A little piece of all of us are in those guys, and I think that ultimately if we all acknowledge our source of spirituality, there is a little bit of God in all of us, and if we can translate that hopefully to an appreciative audience, we can be better for it.
On the phone with Ted Neely, of course, known for the label Jesus Christ Superstar, quite a shadow to fall underneath, but I understand that you stay after the show and talk with the audience. Like, do you ever get the feeling, or do you ever get the odd whack job that comes up and sees you as really some sort of messianic figure?
Yes, and quite frankly, I do whatever I can to nurture that person or those person's feelings, because it seems that no matter where we are in our existence, we all search for some sort of answer or some sort of focus or direction in our spiritual beliefs. And a lot of people apparently have sort of found that in watching this film and or listening to this music. You know, people have a hard time acknowledging their spirituality, and somehow the humanity of this piece brings that out. So when I get the opportunity after the show each night to talk to people, it is absolutely rewarding for me to hear people tell me the stories of how this particular piece has improved their lives in a positive manner.
I never have a problem knowing who I am. I'm a rock and roll drummer from Texas, but for 2 hours a night, I am, with every fiber of my being, trying to assimilate the essence of Jesus Christ. I'm a palette on which people project the Jesus they came to see. That's quite a quote.
My goodness, thank you very much. But I honestly feel that. You see, and after doing this as long as I have, and believe me, it is the ultimate honor to be in this particular project and to be perceived in any way, shape, or form as some connection to the Spirit of Christ, I am honored. I am solely honored. And each night when people come to see the show, I know that they bring their own expectations from what they've experienced in their lives, whether it be this project or just their lives in general. And they seek that solace for a few minutes out of their daily life, and thank goodness they're still able to find it in this project.
Okay, Ted, what's been your own Jesus journey, your personal Jesus journey? I mean, I know you grew up in the buckle of the Bible Belt, where cultural Christianity is rampant.
Yes, I did, in a small town in Texas called Ranger. They referred to it as the town with a church on every corner. And I grew up devoted to church. It wasn't something that was forced upon me. It was completely voluntary. And I had a wonderful experience in that, because our social existence in a town that small is pretty much what happens in the social experiences of the church. And by virtue of that, I had a very deep-set religious background as a child, knew all the Bible stories, and welcomed that into my life, and had no idea at the time that I would be able to use it so readily in that which became my work as an adult. And I cannot tell you how I can feel that being strengthened every single day with the experience of this project, because it is, we're not preaching. This is not, you know, about religion. This is about the perception all the people had of Jesus at that particular time. And even though it is called Jesus Christ Superstar, it's not a one-man show. This particular project gives you the opportunity to look inside the reality of every character, most specifically Judas and all the apostles, Mary Magdalene, Pontius Pilate, King Herod, Caiaphas and Annas, and the high priest of the Sanhedrin. All of these people were affected in some way by the appearance of Jesus at that time, none of whom saw him as anything more than, say, an outspoken, rebellious philosopher.
Sure, sure.
So what we're looking at is that aspect, and therefore it brings the humanity, you see, to the characters, all of those characters, and allows people to much more readily relate to them, to their own personal lives. So that experience for me, think of it, I get to do this every night. I get to walk on that stage and sing these magnificent songs and then hear the response of the people, and then after the show get to stand and look into their eyes and hear them talk about the positive feelings they get from this. So I could not be more blessed.
Sure.
I am so honored that I had that background and it helped me get to this place.
But Ted, all these years playing Jesus, I mean, have you ever had some kind of wild supernatural encounter with, I don't know, maybe the real Jesus showed up in some kind of weird way?
No, other than in my own spiritual convictions. I tend to believe in the personal connection with your own spiritual beliefs, and it's deeply set in my soul. And I accept this for what it is. It's a magnificent opportunity for me to be able to travel around the country and talk to wonderful people. Otherwise, I would not ever have a chance to even come in contact with them, much less have a conversation.
Yeah.
So, no, this has all been very spiritually grounded for me since childhood, and I'm very happy to still be able to do it.
Jim Caviezel will be joining us in a few weeks. I think actually Easter Saturday is what we're aiming for. Good time to have Jesus, another Jesus, on the show. What were your thoughts on Mel Gibson's The Passion of the Christ?
I thought he did a magnificent job. I know that many folks with whom I've spoken said that it was ultra-violent, too much so. However, I whether it's right or wrong to shall we say, expand upon the violence of something, who knows? But I must say that I believe that what Christ went through for all of us is something that could not have been more violent. And what Mel chose to do showed us that. What I was most inspired by with Mel's concept was the fact that for the first time, at least in my knowledge, that he had the courage to show us a relationship between Jesus and his mother.
Mm.
The childhood, the infant, the connection between he and his mother, that was magnificent, and he carried that all the way through the film. Visually, I thought it was absolutely gorgeous, and obviously it touched the hearts of people all over the world, so he did a good job, at least from that point of view.
Well, I've talked to a few friends of Jim's over the last couple of years, and he and others who have played the role of Christ, I mean, some of them have been a little overwhelmed or even scared of playing that role. Did you ever sit there and go, oh my goodness, what am I doing?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And that's precisely why I auditioned for Judas up front.
Oh, yeah.
I don't want to touch that. How do you're stepping on everybody's beliefs possibly by virtue of what you do for your interpretation. So it's always apparent. It's always there. Each night before I walk on stage, that concern is always there, and that's why I do everything I possibly can to emulate, if you will, what I feel is the true essence of the Spirit of Christ in those 2 hours. And with the help of all the people in the company, the traveling company, specifically the musicians and the other singers, and more specifically Corey, was always Carl Anderson up until he passed recently. It's something that we've all collectively focused upon, and we know that that respect is the most important element of this piece, is to respect everyone else's concept for their own spiritual beliefs.
Well, folks, on the phone with Ted Neely. Ted, here's some names for you. Bo Diddley, Tina Turner, Ray Charles.
Yes.
You've done some stuff with these people.
Yes, I've been very, very fortunate all of my adult life to work with magnificent artists, and I've learned so much from all of them. And I hope that I can continue doing that until there's no longer a vocal cord left in this old throat.
Well, give me. It's a bit cheesy. It's kind of like a typical interview thing to do, but I don't know. I like doing it anyway. Give me a one-word response when I say Bo Diddley.
Magnificent.
Tina Turner.
Outrageous.
Ray Charles.
That's a hard one, because I don't know if there's any one word that can express the artistry and the soul of that man. May I say then the original?
Sounds good to me. I want you to choose between these ones. This is going to be tough for you. Sonny and Cher, Smothers Brothers, Phyllis Diller, Jackie Gleason. Which one of those shows brings back the sweetest memories?
Smothers Brothers.
Why?
Because I was with them the longest, off and on, for quite a long time. We, the band I was in at the time, were sort of, shall we say, semi-regulars with their show. Also, when they had their summer replacement show with Glenn Campbell, we did those shows a lot, and we had a really beautiful family relationship with all the writers and the producers and directors and certainly all the cast. And one of the most fond memories of that whole thing was when we would go in on a Monday morning to sit down with the writers to go over the ideas of the sketches for the show that would take a week to shoot. The writers would all come out, and we were all sitting in the room, and the writers would all come out and perform the sketches that they had written. And guess who one of those writers was, that then an unknown gentleman?
Tell me.
Steve Martin.
No way.
We got to sit there and watch Steve Martin do things before anybody knew who Steve Martin was, because he was one of the writers on the show.
Oh, that's classic.
So there's such fond memories with that group, and both Tommy and Dick were such great, dear, dear guys, and still friends to this day.
You know, I had three favorite shows growing up. This will show you know, how old you are compared to me. three fantastic shows I absolutely loved as a young guy. Highway to Heaven, Man from Atlantis, and Starsky and Hutch. And you had something to do with all three of those shows.
You're kidding me, really?
Yeah.
Even Man from Atlantis.
Oh, yeah. Goodness. I know. I was a huge fan of Man from Atlantis. I mean, I tried swimming like that, you know?
Well, Patrick Duffy can still do it.
I used to walk around the school and make dolphin noises. You know, I go...
Yeah. Well, that was also a great experience, too. A man named Herb Solo was the producer of that particular program. He also produced Mission Impossible, so he's one of those very successful TV producers. He created that whole thing and gave me the opportunity to play that offbeat kind of crazy character on that show, so... Again, fortunate people who were kind enough to give me an opportunity.
What role did you play in Starsky and Hutch?
I had a shot on a two-parter that they did where I played a doper drummer, which was I didn't have to dig too deeply.
No.
I mean, they said doper, and I just thought of a doofus, you see.
Yeah.
And I played drums, and they actually had a shot where I was actually sitting on the beach, playing drums on the beach, just to show you how inconsistent they were with the reality of playing drums.
Oh, man. So, did you ever get a chance to ride in the Gran Torino?
Yes, I sure did.
Man, that's cool.
We did that many times. Yes.
You've just jumped up the ladder on my envy list right there.
I had to jump through the window. They wouldn't open the door.
Oh, that's hilarious. And, folks, I don't know whether you know this, but Ted Neely wrote and composed the theme song for Michael Landon's show Highway to Heaven.
I was very fortunate to have that relationship. Wonderful, wonderful man. Yes.
You know, a couple of weeks ago, Alice Cooper told me that Meatloaf should apply for this little competition we're doing here called Preacher Idol, because Alice thinks that that Meatloaf does an incredible impersonation of a preacher during his show.
And, he does, absolutely.
And, of course, now, are you still tight with Meatloaf? You still see him or talk to him?
Yeah, he's a dear friend. We grew up in the same area of Texas, you know, played a little football together early on, and then our first experience was in Hair together, and then we did that whole album thing and tour. It was a great experience. He's just absolutely insane.
I hate it when I get a hair in my Meatloaf. It just drives me insane.
You know, he's doing really well as an actor now, too, you know, doing character parts, so...
Man, hey, best concert you've ever been to, Ted?
I think it'd have to be, it would without question be Springsteen. A toss-up between Springsteen and Dylan in the band and possibly Pink Floyd, The Wall.
Wow. One of the best ones I ever went to was Crosby, Stills, Nash opened for Chicago.
Oh, that sounds incredible. I missed that one.
Well, you're a big Eagles fan, a big Crosby, Stills, Nash and Young fan. As a matter of fact, Is that not sort of the style of this CD you put out? Was it last year?
You're absolutely right. I mean, I don't, shall we say, condone thievery, but I have spent my life stealing from some artist somewhere all the time. You see, so I hear something and it inspires me to do something, and then I write something that's similar to, and so on. So, yeah, that's all in my spirit. I came out of a Texas experience where that music was just alive and well, and I'm really into close harmony singing. So, yeah, whatever I do certainly has touches of all of those magnificent musicians.
Ted Neely, I don't know if you've ever gone to the IMDb website where, you know, it gives you the bio and a lot of interesting facts about various stars
such as
yourself.
I'm not, yeah.
Okay, well, here's some things that they put on there, and sometimes they're true and sometimes they're not. So once and for all, I want to clear up a few things with you. Do you mind?
Okay.
All right. Here's a quote. He almost missed out on being cast in Jesus Christ Superstar. After inviting director Norman Jewison to see him in a matinee performance of The Who's Tommy, he was injured during a show just prior to the one Jewison had bought a ticket to see. He recovered in time for the next show. Immediately following this, he drove from L.A. to Jewison's hotel in Palm Springs, dressed up as Jesus Christ. Norman was leaving for Israel soon thereafter to shoot the movie. Not only did Jewison accept his explanation and apology, he gave him the title role in said film. True or false?
It's true. There's hours of explanation that surround that, but in a nutshell, that's absolutely true.
That's wild. Here's another one. Made his debut as a camera operator during the filming of one of the more memorable scenes in Jesus Christ Superstar, that in which Judas Iscariot is chased down a sand dune by five tanks. Is that true?
It's absolutely true. In fact, there was a hole dug deeply enough for this little skinny guy to crawl down into, and I held the camera as Judas and the tanks ran over me, so to speak.
The tour bus scene in the opening and closing sequences of Jesus Christ Superstar was loaned to the production by Neely and his rock band.
I wish I could say that were true, because that sounds so romantic.
Hold on, I'm crossing that one out. See, this is going
to... Yeah,
I mean,
there have been people come to me and say, you guys lived in that bus before you did that, right? It was an old bus. It was there, you know.
Yeah.
We took a lot of stuff to Israel, but they weren't about to take a bus from America.
All right. 39 lashes scene was so realistic that his mother walked out on it. True?
Yeah. Yes, absolutely true. Broke her heart. Very first screening of the film before it was ever released. It was the first screening. We all sat down and looked at it. She was able to come to it, and it just broke her heart. She couldn't take it.
Because she never laid a hand on you.
No, never.
Isn't that rare for a mama from the South to never lay a hand on the boy?
Absolutely, and even more rare for the father. But my parents, God bless them, were people who wanted to communicate, you know, not mutilate.
Yeah. For Jesus Christ Superstar, he did an unexpectedly thorough job of reenacting Jesus' bull in a china shop rampage through the temple's unclean flea market. So thorough, indeed, that director Norman Jewison managed only two takes of the scene before running out of unbroken props.
That's absolutely true. In fact, the first take, he said, well, I don't know if we can do this again, but we're going to give it a try.
So, man.
I mean, that's another magical thing about this is I get a chance to experience primal therapy every night.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's classic. Did you meet your wife, Leanne, on the set of Jesus Christ Superstar?
I absolutely did, out in the middle of the Negev while we were doing these wonderful songs. And I got to tell you, I went to Israel absolutely frightened to death about the possibility of what I was about to do, connected with what we were saying earlier, the expectation of that. and it was the first film I'd ever been involved with. And then Norman Jewison was the director who had just finished Fiddler on the Roof and had a, you know, a credentials miles long, and I was intimidated by all of that. So I went over there to work. I didn't go over there looking for a date. By golly, there she was.
There she was.
Been together ever since. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean that's very scriptural, actually, as well, Ted. Because what was Adam doing when Eve came along? He was sleeping. He wasn't looking for a woman.
Oh, we active males, huh?
Yeah. Yeah. That's right. Hey, this tour that you're doing now, is this the first time you'll be playing Jesus without Carl Anderson beside you?
Yes. Yes. I've done everything with this piece from the, you know, beginnings of the Broadway piece to the film to subsequent tours. Carl has always been a part of everything that I've done. We pretty much became, at least for ourselves, the yin-yang of this concept. And this is the first time Carl was supposed to be involved with this, bless his heart, but while we were putting it together, he contracted leukemia and it took him out rapidly. And I miss him more than I can ever say. And I honestly feel that from a spiritual connection that he somehow guided us to Corey.
Well, yeah, of course, replacing Carl is Corey Glover of Living Color fame. Did Corey have any initial problems coming in and sort of owning that role
absolutely.
Because you can come in and try to fill Carl's shoes, and I don't think that's a good move.
Well, see, that was the biggest problem that I had in the casting process, because when he fell ill and it was obvious he was not going to be able to do it, I decided that was the sign that we should just discontinue this piece. But all the people, the promoters and presenters around American Canada who've been so kind to keep it alive for us all these years, insisted that I carry on. So we started the casting process, and it took over a year and a half. We were looking, and I was looking for somebody to step into Carl's shoes, and that's not possible, you see. So a year and a half passed. We had great singers who came in who just couldn't deliver the intensity, and wonderful actors who just couldn't hit the notes. And we all looked at each other and said, okay, that's it. And then along comes Corey. Corey then became part of it. We started a rehearsal process. I just felt in my spirit that Carl was up there directing it from the sky, and he said, Corey, Neely needs a Judas. Go talk to him. So there we are in rehearsal, and everybody in the company, except for Corey and myself, are what was referred to as the Broadway babies, you know, the triple threat, singer, dancer, actor, the people who get training and do that for her career. And there's Corey and myself, two rockers who are trying to do what we do. He was extremely intimidated because it was his first experience in this particular atmosphere. And he came up to me one day and said, Jesus, I have a problem. I don't know what to do. I'm trying to step into Carl's shoes, and it's impossible, and I have to look in your face, and I just feel everybody's passing judgment on me. I don't know what to do. Bottom line was that he just felt that. Huh. Just the absolute opposite was happening. Everybody loved him. He brought an energy that was magnificent, and obviously we all know he can sing incredibly well, so he had no problem with that. But he had a problem adjusting, and he confessed to me that when he was 9 years old, his grandmother took him to see the film, Jesus Christ Superstar, and that was what made him decide to become an entertainer. And then Carl Anderson was part parcel, the reason he wanted to sing.
That's
so
amazing.
There he is now every night, if you will, paying tribute to Carl, but he's made it his own role.
Unbelievable. You know what, the only thing that would have made this now touring production of Jesus Christ Superstar, of course starring yourself, Ted Neely, and Corey Glover of Living Color, the only thing that would have made this even more special would be if you could have hoodwinked Jack Black to continue playing the role of Herod.
Like I said, you did your research. My goodness. You're absolutely right. And Jack was born to play the role, bless his heart. And he did it with us out in Los Angeles August a year or so ago. And we had a great time raising funds for the California Youth Theater. And Zach not only had a personal connection with Superstar, but an extremely personal connection with the California Youth Theater for whom we were raising the funds. We started that organization in 1976, Carl and myself and a school teacher out in Santa Barbara, California, for the children to have something to do in theater. And it just turns out that Jack is a graduate of that group. So when we called him and said we'd like you to be a part of it, he jumped at it, and he was absolutely perfect for the role.
He was born to play Herod.
Born to play Herod, and boy, did he let us know that.
For some reason, I have a hard time imagining that.
He was incredible.
I mean, he has many times on screen emulated the sort of screamer rocker voice, but seriously, no one does it like you. Even recently, on the Tonight Show with Jay Leno. Folks, check this out. You got to have a little listen to this one. This is amazing stuff. Dude, how do you do that? I mean, seriously, I can understand when you're a young guy and, you know, you don't mind just ruining the chords, but does it not mess with you these days?
It doesn't at all, I promise you. I've been doing that all my life. I don't know what it is. It's some freaky thing that happened when I was a child. My mom was quoted as saying a long time ago, well, he came into the world screaming, and he'll scream until they plant him somewhere.
Oh, my goodness. Seriously. Who have people most compared your voice to? I would imagine you had someone like David Clayton Thomas.
Yeah, certainly the way I sound, apparently, is reminiscent of David. A lot of people talk about Don Henley a bit in some of the quieter moments, and then people who are really courageous and don't mind making me feel extremely intimidated say, are you the guy that's with Led Zeppelin? Are you that guy? You know, we all have things we wish we could have done.
Oh, man.
Like I said earlier, I honestly have always stolen from everybody I listen to. I appreciate everybody who sings, no matter what type of music it is, and I emulate that whenever I perform, and so I'm just an amalgam of all the people I really love.
This Friday night and this Saturday night coming up in Toronto at the Sony Center. I'm going to be down there on Friday night myself. I'm quite looking forward to it. As a matter of fact, doing the research here, Ted, I was watching some clips on YouTube, and I don't know whether I should admit this or not, but you made me cry again. And I'm not one of those, you know, late night DJs, you know, playing romance songs all the time. I'm just not wired that way. But there is just something about the score, your voice, the way you passionately slip into the skin of Christ. I mean, that is just an eerie combination.
I don't know what to say from that. You just made my hair stand up on my arm saying what you said, you know. And I honestly believe, with all respect, Drew, that when you say you're not one of those late-night soap opera music DJs, so to speak, I think that's within all of us. And I think that we all have a different way of allowing that to be seen. And somehow, those of us who have a spiritual connection, and I believe that everybody has that universal spirituality, whether we acknowledge it or not is another story. Somehow, this project, this Jesus Christ Superstar, allows us all to have that private moment with whatever our belief system is. And therefore, the emotion comes to the surface, and it is pure and perfect when it does.
What's around the corner for you? Is it Rasputin? Is that what's coming up next?
I don't believe you and your research. Yes. I should call you and ask you what I'm doing next. That's certainly the plan. You know, we all have plans, best laid, as they say. And we're going to hopefully do that when this one runs its course. It's a piece based upon the fall of the Romanov dynasty, and it focuses specifically on the relationship between Rasputin, the mad monk, and the young boy, Alexei, who would have been the Tsar had the family survived.
Well, I think that whatever you do, you will bring to it the gifting that God has given you. And I'm just thankful. I really am. I know you have lines, hordes of people lining up thanking you and telling you what this role, this performance, this musical, the whole thing, what it's done in people's lives. And I just want to join that line and say thanks. It's made an enormous impact over the years. And Ted Neely, from the Drew Marshall Show, just thanks, man. Seriously, thank you very much.
Let me I just throw that back at you, because to hear you say that... Think about that. You're acknowledging something that I had the honor of being a small part of, because there were many, many, many people in that film, and we have over 50 people in our touring company. I'm a small part of whatever that feeling is, and I can't tell you how honored I am to hear you say that, Drew Marshall.
I look forward to seeing the performance Friday night.
Please come back and say hello, will you?
I will. I'll talk to your people or have my people call your... I don't know, whatever it is.
Whatever that is, yeah.
All right, Ted. We look forward to having you in Toronto Friday, Saturday at the Sony Center. Thanks a lot for joining us.
Absolutely. My pleasure.
Okay, take care, man. Ted Neely on the Drew Marshall Show. This is my favorite song.
Why should you want to know? Don't you mind about the future?
Ted Neely singing
don't
it out.
Don't you try
What's the Buzz from Jesus Christ Superstar. I'm going to play this puppy just for a bit because it is a funky tune and Tim and I are going to rock the house. We'll be right back, folks, with the Council of Many segment on the Drew Marshall Show. Stay with us.
Even give your plans and forget. Even tell you where I'm going.
When do we ride to Jerusalem? 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 When do we ride to Jerusalem?
Why should you want to know? Why are you obsessed with fighting? Times and fates you can't defy. If you knew the path we're riding, you'd understand it less
what's
than
buzz?
I.
What's the buzz? Tell me what's happening. What's the buzz? Tell me what's happening. What's the buzz? Tell me what's happening. What's the buzz? Tell me what's happening.
Let me try to cool down this bit. Let me try to cool down this bit. Let me try to cool down this bit. Let me try to cool down this. Let me try.
Like what you've heard? Listen again online at drewmarshall.ca.
Mary, that is good while you prattle through your supper.